Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Last Tuesday, Attorney General Eric Holder appeared before a House Judiciary Committee. He was questioned by members of Congress about the Obama administration's stance on the legalization of marijuana. Here's Democratic Representative Steve Cohn from Tennessee asking Holder about marijuana's status as a Schedule I drug.
Why will you not ask the secretary to initiate that program to get marijuana out of Schedule I? It's obviously not Schedule I.
Well, what's obvious to one is perhaps not obvious to another. I think, as I said, that given the responsibilities that I have...
Well, let me ask you this. The secretary would make that study to determine it. Why not initiate the opportunity for the secretary to make the study and base it on science? And until you do that, it's not going to happen.
The message around marijuana in our country right now is confusing. The legalization of marijuana is clearly taking root, and for proponents of the drug, it's simply a matter of time. But keeping it Schedule I means that the federal government equates marijuana with hard drugs like heroin. So here's the question. Are we living in the era of legal marijuana? To help us answer that question, we're joined by U.S. drug historian Kathleen Friedel. Her book, The Drug Wars in America, was released last year and chronicles the drug war from 1940 to 1973. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome to Latino USA, Kathleen.
Thank you very much, Maria.
All right. So what does Schedule I mean, and why is marijuana listed as a Schedule I drug?
Well, it's a great question, and it's not an obvious answer because it's not a scientific assessment, even though the government has insisted that it is a scientific assessment. In fact, marijuana is Schedule I or prohibited drug alongside heroin for historical and political reasons. During the 1930s, when the drug first became widely known, the government regulated and taxed marijuana the same way that it did heroin and cocaine. When the government decided to prohibit those substances and declare them to be contraband, marijuana was grouped with those other drugs. And even at the time, there was much discussion over whether marijuana deserved to be classified as a narcotic. Nevertheless, today it still is one.
So there is a sense among voters probably who voted for President Barack Obama that he's progressive on certain things and on social issues. But as you can see, Eric Holder basically says he will not do anything right to get marijuana off the Schedule I. So what's the message here?
You know, I think that the administration is trying to have it both ways. I think that they are trying to publicly portray themselves as drug reformers, even if that reform just comes in the form of tacit approval of marijuana legalization efforts moving forward. But informed marijuana reformers like myself, and like the congressman who posed the question to Eric Holder, know that the administration has much more power available to it and could easily begin the process of reclassifying marijuana if it were truly committed to a regime of drug policy reform.
All right, so let's do a Dreamovision moment. If marijuana were to be taken off Schedule I and legalized at a federal level, what would that look like? And especially for me as a parent, where it's just like, oh my God, then my kids are going to be able to have access to it. What do you say to people who raise those questions?
And that's a great question, Maria, and I'm really glad you asked it. And I'm particularly glad that you brought up your kids, because your kids right now have better access to more potent marijuana than they would under a legalized regime. If you ask any teenager if it's easier to get hold of alcohol or marijuana, they will all tell you marijuana, because any criminal will sell to a kid. But alcohol, as we all know, is a very tightly regulated business here in the United States. It's not perfect, and marijuana legalization will not be perfect, and the transition to it will also be highly imperfect, but it is a much better scenario. In almost every single decriminalization or legalization effort that's gone forward, including decriminalizing heroin in Portugal, what we find consistently is teenagers have less access to the drug after decriminalization and legalization.
So this is a real controversial question. I know that your whole life is dealing with controversial issues, Kathleen. But, you know, Jay-Z has said that the reason why he believes he's such a strong businessman is because of some of what he learned on the street in drug dealing. So, you know, for people who say legalization would be a solution to many problems, what happens if you legalize marijuana, but black market drug dealing has been a strong way for economic opportunity and prosperity. Not that it's a good way, but that it's a job market that is then taken off the table.
Yeah. You know, I have to tell you, Maria, that I'm so glad you raised that question. This is the aspect of legalization that I find to be the most neglected. Nobody's talking about this. But the fact is, the black market, the illicit market in drugs, be it marijuana, heroin, or anything else, including legal drugs sold illegally, that black market is one of the most vibrant and, let's say, well-paid and well-structured opportunity structures in a lot of poor and inner city neighborhoods, and increasingly also in a lot of rural areas as well. And you cannot take away that opportunity structure, if you will, without also focusing on the neglect and poor state of other opportunity structures in those very same places, be it the education system, be it the military, a very classic opportunity structure where a lot of people in this country, immigrants and otherwise, have kind of worked their way into citizenship and status via the military. There are all these kinds of classic opportunity structures, and it's not often thought of or characterized as such, but the black market is an opportunity structure in a lot of neighborhoods where other things are kind of withering on the vine.
Now, Kathleen, there are so many marijuana arrests every year, so many young men and women in prison. It's so heavily prosecuted. So what is the end game here?
Well, in my book, I trace why we went from regulating these drugs, including heroin, to prohibiting them. And what I found was it had very little to do with trying to affect the number of addicts or the price or the purity of a drug, and had more to do with the state eager to claim tools, which it felt it very much needed, whether it was a way to police the inner city, for instance. During the 1960s, our cities were embroiled in racial conflict, and police found that the drug war afforded them tools that remained, let's say, impervious or untouchable from civil rights reform or from police professionalization. Likewise, in terms of foreign policy, the drug war has given the United States a way to conduct itself throughout the developing world after Vietnam kind of soured the American public on global engagement of that kind. So the drug war is a way in which our government funnels resources, creates alliances, breaks alliances throughout the developing world. And it's that addiction that needs to be addressed. We need an intervention, if you will, because our government is addicted to the drug war.
Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
You're very welcome.
Kathleen Friedel is the author of the book, The Drug Wars in America. She spoke to us from Washington, D.C.